Candace Bushnell's Sex, Success, and Sensibility on the Sirius Stars Channel, Sirius 102.
Here in the Sirius Satellite Radio Tower in New York City. It's actually not a tower, and it's not the Sirius Satellite Radio Tower either. It's just a building. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. I just wanted to see if the big producers were listening, and then they'll be screaming, "Ah, what's she saying about the building?" Anyway, we are ready to take your calls about the holidays. Your worst holiday experience, and my worst one was when I had to go on a yacht. I know, it sounds like, what is she complaining about? She was on a yacht, but I think the guy who owned the yacht, and he was like 35, and it's really annoying if a 35-year-old has $1 billion, don't ask me why. And he tried to kill people. Yeah, he did. He put us all on this little tender boat at night. I thought the waves were big, and they thought it would be fun to jump them, and then they couldn't find the boat. So that was, like, fun, being in the middle of the ocean, and you can't find the boat. I thought I was going to die. 877-974-7487. So we're going to talk about the holiday things, and we're also talking to Susan Shapiro. Yay! Who has a new book, a book that's coming out on Tuesday, Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic, How to Meet and Marry Your Match. And Susan, you've written several books, Quitting Smoking.
5 Men Who Broke My Heart.
5 Men Who Broke My Heart.
Lighting Up.
Lighting Up.
And this is the new one.
And
this is my first interview.
Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic. Go out and get it. I mean, there's great stuff in here.
Thank you.
I mean, this is a book that is not just about fixing people up. It's really about, fixing yourself up and just having a really, really sensible attitude towards dating, which I love. So
thank you.
So we're going to talk about that, Susan.
Fantastic.
What was I going to say? You think the holidays are good?
I think the holidays are
dating.
The best time to meet somebody.
Because I think that everybody feels the holidays are bad.
But what's great is everybody is manically depressed and freaking out, and they want to change their life, and they're making New Year's resolutions. So if you walk into a party and you've got the sexy mini skirt and the red shirt and you're smiling and you're dazzling, they'll just be like, that's the answer. It's her. And people are very like, that's a sign from God. It's such a great time to be at parties and events and be out there. The only thing is don't sleep with anyone. Have fun, give out your card, kiss. Do not sleep with anyone over the holidays. That's what I would say for single people.
Okay, now I mean a couple of things. One thing that I wanted, I saw this today on the holidays, like 50% of people who are like in shaky relationships will stay in the relationship through the holidays because they don't want to be alone. And 3% of people will stay in the relationship because they want the presents, which I kind of get. Like, you know, you've been dating someone for 2 years. This was kind of the way I thought when I was younger. You know, you're dating someone for 2 years and you're like, I deserve something. Like, I deserve a nice watch. And the holidays come and the holidays put so much pressure on relationships, of course, because you know when the holidays come. And I think I sound really kind of Dr. Phil-ish here, which I love. But you know, when the holidays come, if somebody's really interested and if they're invested, you know, and if they're not, they don't come to your parents' house, or they'll come to your parents' house and get into a fight with your mother.
On the other
Susan,
hand,
thanks
you
a lot. You're telling all the single people to go out on New Year's Eve. one of those single people is going to steal someone's boyfriend.
Well, I have very low expectations for the holidays, put it that way. And I have the most amazing husband in the world. And I think the last time he bought me a cool present was the engagement ring. So I have very low expectations. My dad has been married to my mom for 52 years. I can't remember the last present he got her on his own. It's usually like you have to remind them 50,000 times and threaten and scream and yell. So I would have very low expectations, even if you're in a relationship, for presents and holidays.
Well, you know, when I was very young, I was like one of those girls. I liked presents because I had no money. And, you know, I kind of date men that had money. And, you know, and I would really hope. I guess I was like a little hooker when I was 25. You know, I really got like that kind of hooker mentality of like, I really need that watch. So I'm going to be really nice to him. And, you know, men did buy me things at Christmas. It's sickening. I hate myself. We're at 877-974-7487. This is Sex, Success, and Sensibility with Candace Bushnell. We're talking about the holidays, worst holiday stories, and also your best New Year's plan, your most fantasy New Year's plan. And I'm here with Susan Shapiro, who is the author of Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic and quite an expert on relationships.
I tell people that. My husband hates everything I write.
Okay. How long have you been married?
10 years.
And where do you live?
I live in the Village.
I live in the Village.
8th Street and Broadway.
Oh, my God. You're a block away from me.
Where do you live?
On 9th Street between
really?
Broadway and University.
Oh, my God.
We're not supposed to say that on the radio. Of course, but it doesn't matter. Anyway. Yeah, you're a block away.
Love the Village.
Yeah, I think it's great. So... You were single for... Now, you got...
Single in New York for 15 years.
Okay, so but you got married when you were in your 30s?
35.
35. Okay, that's kind of the ideal age to get married. I mean, that's the age where you've been sweating it, but you're not freaking out.
I was freaking out a little.
The way you are when you're 37.
I was still freaking out a little. But I have a weird story, though, which is that I didn't really fall madly in love with my husband until our 5th anniversary. And he hates when I write that, but it's the truth. And I always think that people are too into instant gratification and instant chemistry. And my theory in Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic is that it takes a lot of work and that you have to keep fixing yourself up. And that, you know, putting in time and effort and energy in a relationship can make it much better.
Well, you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because I have to find this in your book, but... You talked about, you know, everybody wants that instant gratification. And when people are fixed up, they will often get back to the person who fixed them up and say, you know, hey, the guy was short, the guy was bald, I didn't like his teeth. And as you said, hey, you know, if you're not perfect yourself...
And this was based on my own experience, because my matchmaker, who was 10 years older than I was and happily married, fixed me up with my husband. And I said, he's really nice, but he's not my type. And she said, your type is neurotic, self-destructive, and not the least bit interested in you. Go out with this one again or you're insane. And she really was like, she hated every guy I'd ever gone out with who'd screwed me over. And she said, this is a good one. And I was so glad she did it. But it took a while. It took a while because he was different. He wasn't right. My type. I was used to jerks, and he was a real person. And it just took a while for me to not only feel comfortable with him, but literally we were married 5 years before I felt that, oh, my God, passionate, amazing love. And you know what? It's better this way. Because when you start out, when I fix up someone and they call me the next day, and oh, my God, they're amazing, they're beautiful, I give it 2 weeks. Because if you're so perfect, where do you go when you get a zit? You know, it can't go any place but down. So if people are a little bit mellower at the beginning and I'm not sure and they're nice, maybe a friend, I think that, you know, there's a place
chance
to go. Yeah.
Well, you know, I did fix a couple up once. And the weird thing, and I told them, you guys are not going to get married, but you'll probably have really good sex, because they both of them would, you know, go out and have sex with everybody. And they went to dinner, and the guy wrote on a napkin, the search is over. And they got married 6 months later.
Are they still married?
And they're still married.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a really good fix-up. We're at 877-974-7487. Sex, Success, and Sensibility with me, Candace Bushnell. And we are talking about secrets of fixing yourself up, secrets of a fix-up fanatic, How to Meet and Marry Your Match by Susan Shapiro, and Susan Shapiro's here with us. And we're also trying to talk about the holidays and our worst holiday experiences. What's your worst holiday experience?
I actually have one. I was the first time I met my husband. We dated for a little while, and I was ambivalent, and we made plans. I think we've been went out four or five times December. We made plans to get together New Year's Eve, and it was kind of implied that we were going to sleep together on
and
New
you
Year's
hadn't
Eve.
Slept together.
We had never slept together, and so it was this ridiculous plan that we're going to go out on New Year's Eve, which was too much anyway for a new relationship to handle. Plus, we were going to sleep together, and I saw him a week before, and he started telling me that his ex-girlfriend was calling him, and I just looked at him, and I'd just been hurt, and I said, you know what? I don't want to, you know, I so don't want to get hurt here that if you're going to start seeing her again, like, let's not sleep together. And he said, well, I like you so much that I'd rather get hurt than hurt you. So I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not sure. So we totally broke up.
Wow.
Right before New Year's. I never slept with him and broke up. But you know what I thought? I thought, I did think my friend was right. This guy's a mensch because he could have slept with me without telling me that he wasn't sure about his ex-girlfriend. But he told me beforehand and then didn't sleep with me. And I went, we broke up. I wound up re-meeting him a couple years later, remembering what a mensch he was. And by the way, nailed him in 5 minutes because I remembered he was a good one and I was older and much more like desperate and angry and freaked out. And this was a good one. So.
This is a fascinating story. This is Sex, Success, and Sensibility. And I am talking to Susan Shapiro, who has written fabulous books on relationships and your own experiences dating in New York, which are not exactly like Sex in the City, by the way.
I love Sex in the City.
I know. I love Sex in the City, too. And people always say, you know, how is it that this girl's going so many dates? And it's like, well, in real life, you don't. I mean, in real life, you know, there are times when you have like three guys in 1 month. You know, you're going dating three guys. But two of those will go away in like a week, and then one of them usually goes away in a month, and then you're left with no one again.
But in New York, you have a million friends, and you're going out every night in the social scene, so it seems like there's more around.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's always fascinated me about New York, is that New York is a place where it feels like there's so many choices of people to date, and yet I think if you asked anybody who really lives here, after you've lived here for 10 years, you honestly feel like you've dated every eligible person in the city and there's no eligible person
left.
One
of my close girlfriends,
Karen.
It's
so weird.
She lived here for 10 years, never met anyone she liked. She finally said, forget it. She moved back to Michigan for a family business. 5 minutes after she moved to Michigan, I remember I was home one summer and we had like a, I called it a find a husband party. I invited everyone I knew from Michigan. She meets her husband in Michigan and they are so happy. And she had been in New York where there were a million more people. But for some reason, there was something about being back in the Michigan burbs that she met her guy right away.
Well, it's that familiar thing.
Also, what else do you do in the burbs?
Yeah, exactly. But you know,
sorry,
I think one of the things is a little. Oh God, I keep burping today. I'm so sorry. I think one of the realities and one of the things that's a little bit of a problem for women who go to a big city is that you're going to a big city to get away from the guys you grew up with. You're going to a big city to meet what you think is a better guy. And instead, what you end up meeting is a really ambitious guy who, you know, even if he's unattractive or you think, you know, nobody would look at him. Well, he comes to New York. He's successful and he's dating models.
Well, the one trick
so you just end up in a situation where
people
with a lot of ambition.
But most people who move to New York, at least most of the women that I know, are moving for their own ambition, which I think is a great reason. I never met a woman who moved to New York in order to meet a guy. Like, I moved to be a writer. All my friends moved to be artists or musicians, which I think is brilliant already because you've already said, this is my priority. My priority isn't I want to get married and have kids. My priority is my career is going to, I'm going to go wherever
career
leads.
But here's the thing, Susan. Like, I completely believe in that, but I don't know. I think it takes a lot for a woman to say, my career is my priority, not meeting a guy. I mean, I think, like, to anybody who's listening out there, you know, we know we say, like, our career is our priority. But unless you've broken up with a guy because you knew it was bad for your career and you knew you weren't going to be able to work and do the kind of work you want to do, you know, most women, if you said to them, if you could choose a guy, an okay guy, or a great career, most women would choose the okay guy, I think. What do you think? You wouldn't.
One of the most important lines that I wrote in Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic is love doesn't make you happy, make yourself happy.
I think so, that is so true.
And I think the trick is that when you say, even if I'll be single for my whole life, it doesn't matter because this is the life I want to have doing this thing. The minute you do that, there's some kind of exciting scent that you give off, and that's when you get love. But I feel like there's a trick attached, which is that if you don't get to the point where you can really believe that or feel that, then it tends not to work out and you tend to be very confused. But I think the minute that you get really clear that even if I die alone, this is what I love in life, this is what's important to me, this is what I have to do, I'm going to follow my heart, that makes you so much more attractive that it just weirdly works out. So,
you know, that's exactly what happened to me. And I didn't get to that point until I was 43. And I was, you know, on the second draft of my third book, and I was just so happy. I was like, this is exactly what I should do, and I don't care. And of course, I met somebody and we got married.
How did you meet?
We met at a gala for the New York City Ballet. And it was one of those really, really bizarre things where, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, your mother says, like, you know when you've met the right guy, and you don't believe it. But our eyes met, and somebody was actually trying to fix us up. I mean, that's what I love so much about your book, Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic, is that it truly is the best way to meet someone, I think, is being fixed up, because the person, in a way, has already been vetted and, you know, comes from the same kind. You know, there's a similar social thing there, which I think is really important.
Exactly. And I talk about love mentors, where you should go to people in your life, whether it's a teacher or a boss or a colleague or an architect or somebody in your life, even your hairstylist, someone that you like, someone maybe that's older, someone that's married. And if you ask their advice and have them fix you up, then like my friend who fixed me up, they could tell you the truth and they could sort of let you in on secrets. So I actually talk about who makes a good love mentor and how you should approach them to ask them.
Well, who does make a good love mentor?
Well, in my case, the two people that fixed me up, because I was fixed up with both my husband and his runner-up, and one of them
Wait, you fixed up with your husband and another guy.
Yes, I was fixed up with two.
Who's this woman who knows two guys to fix you up with? My
one,
God.
One was an editor of mine who I adored, New Woman magazine. And
oh, my God, I remember New Woman.
Yes, New Woman. I used to write for them, and she fixed me up. She was fantastic, and she fixed me up with a fabulous guy. And my husband I met through a filmmaker that I was freelancing for. So here are two older women who were married that were bosses that were just so fantastic and cool, and they just told me the truth. They just told me—
About marriage.
About marriage and about men and about what to look for and how I was looking for all the wrong things. I was just doing the dumb, like, oh, good, a filmmaker, you know, in a leather jacket on a motorcycle going to Paris tomorrow.
Right.
Hey, how cool.
Yes, and that is, I just want to stop there and let's examine that phenomenon, because I hear so many young women doing that. You know, women in their early 20s who live in the city, they'll, you know, who are you seeing? Who's this guy? Well, oh, he's a writer. And he comes from this and that kind of family. Or he's, you know, it's all about the resume. And then you meet the guy, and the guy's a total loser. And you're like, what the hell are you doing? But the resume is bigger than the guy. And I think that is one of the biggest mistakes that women make, especially young women. And, you know, I did it. I would be like, hey, the guy's an actor. And he's been a couple movies. Yeah, I'm going
to
date him.
But that's what's so great about getting fixed up from someone you know, because you have to listen really carefully to what they say. And a lot of times what they'll say, what I'll say is, this is a good person. This person has a heart. This is a sweet, kind person. This is a hard worker. This is somebody together. And what I talk about in Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic is that they're really important raw material that you have to look for. And when you're really ready, you put on these x-ray glasses that show you that even if somebody has this external beautiful package and they're a jerk, you just don't see them, and you start seeing beautiful things. You see that they're a jerk, and you get away from them way faster, and you start looking at the nerd sitting in the corner who might be too short, or you don't like his shoes, or you don't like his hair. If he's a kind, good person who could actually take care of you and you could have a life with, who'd be a good husband and a good father, all of a sudden the x-ray glasses, you focus on him and he's more special. And I think there's a way, and especially when you hang out with happily married women, there's a way that they'll help steer you away from the jerks and the cats who can't do it, and they can just sense someone that's a good person who could love you, who could care about you, and that's what you have to have radar out for.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, because I think that's something that sort of strikes fear into the hearts of, you know, especially young women who really, really, really want the groovy, groovy guy. But we're going to talk to Grace in New York. Grace?
Hi. Hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
You're talking to Candace and Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
So I live in New York. I'm actually home for the holidays right now.
Good. Are you in college?
No. I live in New York. I'm 30.
Oh, okay.
Out of college.
You sound young, sweetie.
Thank God you say that. But I've been out with my parents shopping, listening to my dad's Sirius all night. And I was just listening to you talk about fixing people up. And I wanted to ask you how you overcome, like, that fear of, you know, when you first meet someone and your friends have fixed you up with them, there's just these awkward moments that I personally have a really hard time getting through.
Well, you know, this is Candace talking. I was somebody when I was younger, I went on tons of blind dates. Like, I loved to go on blind dates and to be fixed up with people because, and this is not new, my attitude was that it's practice. And part of this, part of dating and life is about being social and having social skills, which are going to, you need social skills in
marriage. Brilliant.
You need them in at work. You need social skills.
And you know what? What I would do is do a test, which is pretend that this is, you know, a boss that you want a job for or someone from the co-op board and try just as a test. You just say to yourself, I'm going to be the most charming I could ever be. I'm going to be interesting. Yeah. And even if you think they're boring, ask them questions about themselves and smile and share anecdotes and be as warm and as kind. Because, by the way, that begets good karma. And what's fascinating is you wouldn't believe how many people that at first seem nerdy or boring. And when you ask them the right questions and you seem interested, they light up and their generosity comes out, too. And all of a sudden, it's much more interesting, even if it just becomes a friend. And you know what? I went out on a couple blind dates and the guys were trying so hard and they were so sweet, even though they weren't for me. I fixed two guys that I had dated up with their wives. So you might be meeting a guy who's not right for you, but maybe he'll lead you to your husband.
Well, you know what? Right. Everybody always says that, you know, maybe he's not right for you, but maybe he's got a friend. And I think that could be a little bit tricky. But what I think it really is, Grace, it's really about you're going to get a good reputation. You know, I mean, people, it's like 6 degrees of separation. People talk. And if
you
go
be
on one of these
person.
Dates with a friend, yeah.
Be a nice person. Because
be a
picture,
great person. Practice!
Picture if it's like your brother, how would you feel if like some girl said, you know, oh, he's so nerdy, I don't like him. Like, be a kind, generous spirit and just say to yourself, I'm gonna give this person my most. I'm going to try. I'm going to treat them like they're special. And then the karma comes back to you.
Now,
I think
Grace,
it's
did you
the whole idea, though, of going on a date knowing that you're trying to date one another, like being set up. There's just an awkwardness that I'm not really capable of.
You know what? Let me just tell you one thing, though. Awkwardness is great.
Yes.
Because a lot of people think it's supposed to be magic. And let me tell you something. If you go on a couple dates and it's magic and it feels too good to be true, it is. And he's married and he's got 22 kids. Okay. So if it feels weird and awkward and you might not like each other and it's uncomfortable and, oh, my God, he misses your lips and whatever. Awkwardness is great. And that's a big part of intimacy. And that's a lot of people have these misconceptions that it's supposed to be like, oh, my God, you know, like it's the most amazing instant chemistry, fantastic feeling. And it's okay if it's awkward. And you know what? If you already know in advance that you're awkward, you could find an activity like go bowling or go to the movies if you know that you're smart talking about movies or go to a reading. You know, so if you already know that there's certain things about yourself that where you're going to get awkward, you can sort of work around it.
But you know what, Grace? You've got to try. You have to.
The
key to life,
sort of readjusting the way you look at it.
Listen, the key to life is being willing to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. If you're not willing to put yourself in uncomfortable situations, it's really, really hard to succeed because as Susan says in her book, you ain't going to meet anybody sitting in your living room by yourself, except for a fantasy man.
What I say is eating ice cream, watching Sex in the City reruns.
Exactly. So you have to
be. Which I've done many a time.
Yes. And so, Grace, you
have
to.
After you get married, by the way, you could put on the sweats and get the ice cream and watch the reruns. You just got to wait until you get somebody first.
Exactly. But you know what, Grace? It's like you got to bite the bullet, go out there, be in an uncomfortable situation, and see what happens.
Right.
And you will develop social skills that will, you know, then when you meet the right guy, you'll know what to say. We'll be right back. Grace, thank you so much.
Ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're 877-974-7487, and we'll be talking about holidays and dating and fixing people up and having someone steal your boyfriend. 877-974-7487.
Candace Bushnell's Sex, Success, and Sensibility on the Sirius Stars Channel. Sirius 102. Call 877-9-SIRIUS.
Okay, our music producer, Joanne, was just about... Joanne, you were just about having an orgasm during that scream. I mean, God, if only music could just give us an orgasm, we wouldn't need men, would we? Anyway, you can give the gift of Sirius this holiday season by adding an additional subscription to your account. That's your existing account. If you give the gift of Sirius, we will give you the radio for free. In other words, you add a subscription, you get a free radio, and then you can give that to that very, very special person. You can solve all your gift needs right now by calling 1-888-SIRIUS-1. To qualify for the free radio, however, you must sign up for at least 6 months, but I know that you want to do that anyway, because you don't want to miss 1 week of Sex, Success, and Sensibility with Candace Bushnell. Yay! That's 1-888-SIRIUS-1. Details at Sirius.com/gift. Okay. We're going to take any calls about your worst holiday experiences or your fantasy New Year's Eve. But we were mostly talking to Susan Shapiro, who is a very well-known author And her new book is Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic. And this is more, way more than a book about fixing up your friends. It's really about fixing up yourself. And it's really Susan's philosophies about dating and mating and marriage and what to expect and what to look for. And it's really, really sensible. It's not this kind of fluffy fantasy kind of stuff out there. It's sensible stuff.
So I call myself a raging feminist who loves men and marriage.
Well,
there aren't that many, really.
You know, it's did you really work for New Woman?
I freelance for them, yeah.
Because New Woman, this was a magazine that came out in like the 1980.
Mm-hmm.
It came out when I first moved to New York City, and that magazine was fascinating. You could get it in a supermarket, and it was pretty small, I think, circulation, but every story was really like a feminist kind of woman has to survive, guys are jerks. Like, basically, according to New Woman, every man on the planet should have been eliminated. And unfortunately, I've never quite been able to give up that New Woman philosophy. That
really,
every man should be eliminated.
Men. I think
no,
you could be a, I think
I
you
love
be a raging
too.
Feminist and love men. And a lot of people don't realize that. A lot of my students don't realize that. I have two careers that I absolutely adore, and I have three brothers and a dad and the most amazing husband, and people think it's incompatible to get exactly what you want in your career, but also to be madly in love with a man. And it's not, it's completely compatible. And actually,
I think it's totally compatible, and it's something that everybody should try, but you got to try both so that if one doesn't work, you have something else to fall back on.
Absolutely. Love doesn't make you happy. Make yourself happy, and then you get love. That's my trick.
So Susan's new book is out on Tuesday, Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic. It's a fantastic book. Susan, who should one go to? You suggest that people go to people to be fixed up. Now, that's something that when I was younger, one did that all the time, automatically. Like, if you were dating somebody and you broke up, you would go to all of your friends and you would tell everybody you knew that you were looking for someone and they should fix you up. And the result was people love to help and people love to fix you up. They do.
I think so, but I think you have to be careful because, hey, your cousin's cute. I want to hook up with him. That'll get you laid. You know, but if you really want to meet a husband, I think you have to rephrase the way that you ask and when you ask. And I think maybe taking someone out to lunch or having a few minutes alone for a drink and saying to somebody who's married, I really admire you and I really admire your marriage. And if you know someone fabulous, please keep me in mind. That's really important. And that's very different from, I want a tall, rich guy who lives in this neighborhood, who does this career and who's this
right.
age. You know, if you give somebody your whole laundry list,
they can't do it. No.
Not only can't do it, they don't like you.
And that guy's a jerk.
They don't
exactly.
want to help you.
No.
But if you say to
because
somebody,
they want to be married to a tall guy with all his hair and who's really rich.
But if you say to someone, I admire you and I admire your marriage and I trust your opinion and I would love to meet somebody as fabulous as your spouse if you could ever think of anyone, that's what worked for me. And that's very different than, hey, hook me up.
But the only thing that I'm saying is that I don't think you have to be really ready to get married. And a lot of young women think that they want to get married. And so they end up, you know, dating all these guys.
Absolutely right. And my first chapter is how to fix yourself up first. And I talk about
now,
all the elements of your life
that
should be together before you even start thinking about moving in with someone
okay.
and getting married.
Now, this is one of my favorite things in the fixing yourself up. Because this was me in my 30s. I can't tell you how many single men and women I've met who, after asking to be fixed up, have confessed to me that deep down they feel like a lonely, confused, unworthy, self-destructive mess. They are without a career they care about, don't have a comfortable place to call home, lack special friends, are not in touch with any family members who enhance their world, and don't take good care of themselves. They admit that they don't have a game plan. Let's talk about that. And also, I love the part where you said that you have to look around and see where you live. And if you are living with four roommates,
people
sleeping on a fold-out couch, You're really looking for a place to live.
Yeah, and
not
people
a husband.
Do this. Exactly. And people do this stupid thing, which is they postpone. So they think, I don't have to deal with a good living situation now because when I get married, it'll get taken care of. Or I don't really have to, you know, I don't have to get a car. I don't really have to worry about this yet. And they postpone their life. And first of all, I think that's really stupid. I think that you should stop postponing your life. And if you live in a gross place, that's psychoanalytic feng shui. You're in a gross place. Stop being in a gross place. You need to be in a pretty place. You need to be in a place that you feel safe and comfortable. And by the way, it doesn't have to be $1 million. I mean,
no.
I had tiny little studio apartments, but they were clean and I love them, and they were filled with books, and it was important to me, and it had a good energy because I fixed it up nice.
See, Susan, I didn't. I was telling our listeners earlier, I slept on a piece of foam. So I was not ready to be fixed up for marriage material. You're listening to Sex, Success, and Sensibility with Candace Bushnell, 877-974-7487. And we're talking about all things relationship with Susan Shapiro, who's the author of Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic, which comes out on Tuesday, and you have to get it. What if one just isn't quite ready? I mean, you must see this all the time because you see all the NYU students.
Oh, by the way,
what do you see?
Think you should be single for as long as you want. And if you're happy single and never want to get married, that's fantastic. And that's amazing. The people who come to me tell me I want to get married and I'm having trouble.
How old are they usually?
It could be any. I've had 20-year-old students come to me and 90-year-old people come to me. So there's a wide range. But if you're not ready to get married, that's absolutely fabulous. I'm not saying that I'm not saying you should if you're not ready at all. In fact, I'm so glad I stayed single until I was 35. And most of my friends got married in their 40s and have great careers. So I think it's completely individual, and I'm not shoving marriage down anybody's throat. I think you should have a great, fun life. If people come to me and say, okay, now I'm ready, I feel like I want to get married, then this book, Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic, is going to help them figure out who they should ask to fix them up and all kinds of tricks of courtship. And, you know, I say I have a chapter, Making the Move to Improve. It's not like you have to have a PhD or be brilliant or have a gorgeous apartment to be ready. It's just that you have to be in a good head. You have to be making improvements and trying to get your life together in certain ways before you're going to be attractive to the right kind of person.
I mean,
I had two girlfriends
totally
that got a summer. They said, forget men this summer. I'm getting a summer share with all my girlfriends in the Hamptons, and both of them met their husbands there. You know, so just something as stupid as just saying, I'm going to take care of myself and make sure I have a fun summer to hang out with my friends, led them to love. So I have another girlfriend who decided, forget men, I'm going to Poland. I've always wanted to find out about my family, you know, what happened to my past with my family. She plans a 6-week trip to Poland, and a girlfriend was fixing her up, and there was this great doctor who she was fixing up with a bunch of people, and she happened to mention, oh, Randy's taking this trip to Poland, and the guy got all interested and excited, and he's like, that's the one I want to meet, because she was doing this adventure, and that's her husband, and they have two kids now. So sometimes you take one adventure for yourself, or you find one way of taking care of yourself, and it leads to great things.
Well, you know, that's actually what I did when I met my husband. I did that thing that people always tell single women to do and you never want to do, which is to go out by yourself. And I was going to the ballet, which I love. And I thought, gosh, I haven't, you know, I've never really done that to the extent that I want to do it. So I'm going to go. And I bought a ticket and I got all dressed up. And sure enough.
Brilliant. You took a chance.
It happened. Of course, I was, you know, well seasoned at 43. You see, I could go out and socialize with a doorknob, if I had to, so I could go to a party and stand by myself. You're listening to Sex, Success, and Sensibility, 877-974-7487. We're talking to Susan Shapiro, Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic. Susan, what's the biggest mistake women make?
This fantasy that the perfect man with the perfect hair and the perfect outfit and the perfect job is going to walk up to them and sweep them off their feet. It's such Hollywood bullshit, and it hurts people. It's such ridiculous mythology. And if you would just get all the stupid fantasies out of your head and act like you're meeting a friend, just somebody nice, just tone it down and stop being the perfectionist. I mean, women that are smart and interesting, you wouldn't believe the superficial junk that comes from their mouth. I literally have a brilliant, beautiful girlfriend in Michigan who wouldn't go out with a guy that I showed her who I wanted her to meet because she didn't like his shoes. And I just said to her, are you insane? You can buy him new shoes, but you can't buy him a new heart. Are you crazy? And by the way, since I've been married, from his underwear to his socks to his hair to every ounce of furniture, you can totally redo that. That's stupid. That's superficial. But you can't fix if somebody doesn't have a brain or they don't have a heart. You can't fix that.
I love that. I love that. You're listening to Sex, Success, and Sensibility. We're at 877-974-7487.
My husband's going to divorce me if he's listening.
Sweetie, you know what? I feel like my husband is going to divorce me like every other minute because of, you know, what I write and what I say. And, you know, for a long time, even after I got married, you know, I was like, marriage is not that great. But I was very happy. We're going to talk to... Okay. Oh. We'll be back in a second. Anne, we're going to talk to you in 1 second. My producer kind of messed up there. That's the pause. I'm going to blame her. She's going to be fired tomorrow. Fired ass. Hey.
Candace Bushnell's Sex, Success, and Sensibility on the Sirius Stars Channel, Sirius 102. Call 877-9-SIRIUS.
Welcome! Welcome, it's the holiday season, yay! I'm here with Susan Shapiro, who is the author of Secret of a Fix-Up Fanatic, and this is just a great book about relationships. It's a great book for any woman who was saying, How come I'm not married and everybody else is married? Okay, Anne, we're going to take a call from Anne.
Hi.
Who's looking for advice. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Anne.
You're talking to Candace and Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hey there.
My comment was just that all of the things you're saying about taking vacations and renting that beach house and everything sounds like it's good advice for anyone, I mean, married or single, to have a full life and to remain interesting to the friends you have and the friends you'll meet and your spouse. I mean, it's
absolutely,
it's
but it's
true.
Sort of astounding how many people, and I was just telling Candace, I teach at NYU in the New School and Media Bistro, and it sort of astounds me how many women in their 20s aren't really taking care of themselves. They're sort of postponing. They're postponing things, and then they'll say, I want to meet someone, but they're not out there fighting for a better apartment, or they're not really going for the career that they adore. They're not taking care of themselves. And I didn't have any money when I moved here. I lived in the living room of a one-bedroom apartment for 8 years, but you could still do special things for yourself, you know, to take care of yourself or hang out with people that you like. So I'm actually amazed at how many young women I know aren't going for it in the way that they really should be. And I would say forget about men for a while, and love doesn't make you happy. Make yourself happy. Figure out exactly what you need first.
Right.
But you
have to continue doing that. I mean, I'm married, and once you're married, it doesn't just stop, you know?
Like, no,
you
but there's
absolutely, in
there's
fact,
a temptation, no.
Absolutely. No, that's really important, and I say, in Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic, I tell a secret that my husband hates, which is I didn't really fall madly in love with him until our 5th wedding anniversary. And he hates it when I say that because he thinks it means I didn't love him. But what it's really about, I went into addiction therapy and quit smoking and got my own act together. And I sold a book. And at the point that I was the happiest in my life, I looked over at him and all of a sudden he looked much cuter. And I was so much happier with him because I was happier with myself. So I think what you just said is really brilliant and important that you never stop doing that.
Anne, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about that because that's all about self-esteem issues. And one of the things that, this is a little bit of an issue for me. It's really easy for us to sit here and say, I mean, we both moved to New York. We both had nothing. We were both lucky or unlucky, knock on wood, depending on how you look at it. But, you know, we had a certain amount of drive to get out there and try things and put ourselves in uncomfortable situations and take care of ourselves and, you know, be around interesting people or try to be around interesting people. And it's just so easy to sit here and give advice to people and say, you know, go take a gardening course or go do this or go do that. But unfortunately, I feel like that doesn't really fix the deep down thing, which is a fear. It's fear.
The harder you work, the luckier you get. And I can tell just from watching you. You work hard. And by the way, I did it with therapy. I needed a lot of therapy to fix things, whether it was, you know, my own craziness or self-esteem. I did a master's degree. I had 10,000 rejections before I was able to get luck. I tell my students it took me 23 years of working 100-hour weeks to get a hardcover. So people have this illusion that it's supposed to come easy. And I don't know who made that up. It's not supposed to be easy. Nothing you ever want in life that's worth it is easy.
Well, I actually wish something would be easy. Believe me, I'm getting old, honey. I don't know how much
longer I can go on.
But
isn't it worth it? All the work that you've got what you want. It's even better that you work so hard for it.
It's worth it. But, you know, it's so, I think something people don't understand is, you know, when I was 32 or 33, I was not a success. I was single. I had, like, no dating prospects. I lived in a lousy apartment.
You were freelancing?
I was freelancing. I mean, 1 year I made $10,000, but I still had a mint coat that a boyfriend gave me. But then it got stolen because I live in a really
crappy
place.
You were getting published in cool places. You were living in New York.
You know what? That's true. I was always getting published. But
I remember your byline. I remember that first Observer column was amazing.
Yes.
I was so jealous. I was like, oh my God, she's so smart.
But I wrote for women's magazines before that. I wrote for every women's magazine starting when I was 22 years old.
But so you were
going
for it.
And knocking on their doors, though. I mean, I used to knock on people's doors. And you know, one always forgets this, but I was that person that sent out manuscripts with, you know, your last $20 for stamps. But I feel like saying to people, go and take a course, it's not the right, It's not the right thing to say.
Well, wait
it's
a second.
Be something
classes,
deeper than that.
Not necessarily. Let me tell you something. I've had a lot of classes that I teach that change people's life. I've had a couple people. I teach these seminars at Media Bistro. I've had two people take the seminar, one-day seminar, sell books, which does change your life. So I think classes, education...
Okay,
education is a great thing. And if you say you just don't know what to do, say you're sitting home and you're lonely and you're and get a catalog to NYU, the new school, by the way, University of Michigan, University of Texas, any school in the country, pick up a catalog. And what do you love? What do you want to learn more about? That's a great start.
Okay. See, I think this is so important because I think that there are a lot of people sitting out there who are saying, I'm not really sure what I want to do. If you know what you want to do in terms of your career, as we did, I knew I wanted to be a writer when I was 8. So I was willing to put up with a lot of hardship because I knew what I wanted to do. But let's say you don't know what you want to
do. Okay, here's one word.
Then what do you do?
Therapy. Therapy. And let me tell you something.
But you know what? Not
all the
therapy
schools,
isn't right for everybody,
yes,
though.
It is. And you know what? Even at schools, there are free counselors at any university in the country. If you look for a counselor, you can find a free counselor just to talk it out with. And you know what? If you don't have a counselor, go to your favorite teacher and make an appointment, make an office hour, and say, I have this little confusion that I thought maybe you could help me with. I'm not really sure what I want to do. And if I tell you how many students said that to me, and I said, you know what? You should go do an internship at Jane Magazine.
Right.
And you know what? I did it to a teacher, and he got me a job at New Yorker magazine, my favorite place. So what happens is figuring out what you need to do next is the brilliant way to go.
Well, you know, I'm so glad that you said that because that actually is the key. It's not what you do and it's not the decisions that you make. It's just doing something. Just do something. We're going to talk to Ashley in New Jersey. Hi Ashley.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Are you frightened?
No, not at all.
Okay, good. You're like, ugh, I'm so over all this stuff.
Candace, you're awesome on air. I just had to tell you.
Oh, thank you, sweetie.
Oh, you're welcome. I just had a question. I'm 22, and I was just wondering how, you know, you stay motivated throughout, you know, pursuing your career. And I have a long figure skating career that's pretty much done, and now I'm starting something new, and I'm getting constantly rejected, but how do you stay motivated through that?
Well, you know what, Ashley? One advantage that you have is that you've already done one thing and been successful at it. And success is really about a series of, in a sense, it's like a series of moves to be successful. It's not like, oh, I have so much talent in one thing. It's about a work ethic, honestly.
Also, figure out exactly what you love. Like, you knew that you love skating, which is great.
Right.
What else do you love? And by the way, my husband used to sit around eating junk food, watching television, and that's what he loved. And you know what? He's a TV writer, and his first book was called Junk Food. So there's not anything that you love to do, you know, don't dismiss it, even no matter how minor. If you like radio, if you like music, find it has to be something you love, and that's the only way you're going to stay motivated. And I get students that say to me, you know, I want to be a writer because I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm
no.
like, you're not going to be successful. Then
you're not going to make a penny.
No, you can only do it if you would be doing it anyway for no money for 100 years. That's what you do because then you have to stay motivated because there's nothing else you'd rather do. And those are the people that become successful.
But you know what, Ashley? Mm-hmm. Also, one of the realities is there are times when you're not motivated. And I think that's important to talk about. There are times in everybody's career, I mean, especially when people are young and they're in their 20s, you do get a lot of rejection. And it does pick away at your self-esteem, and you're put into a lot of positions, situations you've never been in before, and you honestly don't know what to do. I mean, I remember when I was 21, 22, my first job, I didn't know what to do. I hardly even knew how to take the subway. I was terrified every minute. And there were a lot of times when I was like, God, I can't do this. How am I going to do this? This just seems like a Herculean task. And, you know, it's okay to take a break, like a couple of days not being motivated. It's okay.
But
and
also,
a creative
by the way,
person also needs
but
to
hang
have time
out with
off.
People you want to be, though. You know, because one of the tricks when I lost my motivation is I had mentors. And in Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic, I talk about love mentors. So go to that teacher that you like, or if there's someone whose career you admire, and if you're flagging and if you're feeling drained and tired and too much rejection, go to the mentor person and say, you know, I'm sick of dating. I can't do this anymore. I don't think I'm getting ahead. And ask them, because a lot of times they'll tell you the truth. And I think what Candace said is great, which is there's just downtime and there's a lot of rejection. But I find it's very motivating to hang out with people that are, you know, that have been doing it longer.
Hey, and you know what, Ashley? Here's yeah. another suggestion. This is what I do sometimes. Do something. Look at art. Go to art. Read a classic book. Read Of Human Bondage by Somerset Maugham, which is such a depressing book, but it's so great, and it's art. Go to a museum. Like, I never do this, sweetie, but I find when I'm stuck, you know, go for a walk and look at nature. Just do something so that your brain works in a slightly different way. Okay. And that I find really can be really helpful. But and this is so, if this sounds so Oprah-ish, but you know, just keep believing in yourself, girl. But
yeah,
you know what, you're not a freak, and the reality is you have to go through this.
Mm-hmm.
And actually my I have somebody who's writing something on my website, CandaceBushnell.com, that's called The Year of Mistakes, which is something, this is a 22-year-old girl, and she's writing about all the mistakes that she made at, you know, 22 or 23, you know, being a young woman trying to make it in the world. So I'd check that out, too.
Okay.
www.CandaceBushnell.com.
All right.
Woo, good luck, Ashley.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
See, you know, it's really easy to give people kind of simple advice, but I don't, you know, I think what we really want to do is try to give them something that's meaningful, that addresses the thing that we all feel, and especially that we all feel as women, is, oh, maybe I'm not good enough. What do you think about that? Susan, you never feel bad about yourself, no.
Like I said, I had a lot of luck with therapy. I had a lot of luck with having older friends that I would go to and open up to. And by the way, I love your suggestion about reading. In fact, the confessional poets were really important to me. And whenever I would feel down, I would go read Sylvia Plath and Anne Sexton and Ted Hughes and Robert Lowell. And I just felt like somebody understood me. So I think reading is brilliant.
I think, you know, reading any kind of art is, you know, going to a museum, just... You know what? It's like we need sometimes to take ourselves out of just living in such a commercial world and remember that life is really about the soul, ladies. It's about the soul. Susan, thank you so much.
Thanks,
sweetie.
So much for having me on.
This book, I love this book, Secrets of a Fix-Up Fanatic, How to Meet and Marry Your Match by Susan Shapiro. It is filled with everything you need to know as a human being. We'll be back next week,
wow,
6 o'clock on Sirius Stars 102. Woo! Happy holidays.